Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Got Montana issues on the plate here today from the national side of things, environmental policies, Social Security, trade policy, Trump administration, 100 days. Troy Downing, Montana's congressman, is going to join us here in just a little bit. Well, in fact, right now, to talk about that a bit later on, Brandon Lear, who is the Speaker of the Montana House. That session just wrapped up yesterday, sine die. And what was accomplished there? We'll go over that with him as well. So Montana issues today, nationally, with Troy Downing. And then here in Montana, state government wraps up and Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear. Four Voices of Montana. Good morning, Congressman Downing. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning. Well, happy birthday or happy unbirthday, yeah. Whichever one it is.
The crew was marching in here. The team was going to march in here and sing happy birthday. I really appreciate that, you guys. That's very, very kind.
So I got to tell you kind of a fun birthday story. So, even if it's not your birthday, I'm going to say happy birthday.
Thank you, Troy. Yeah.
I had mine last month, and I actually had Steve Scalise and his team come in here. And they brought me a king cake from Louisiana, and Steve Scalise himself sang me the congressional birthday song. But it actually was my birthday, so that was fun.
And I've heard that congressional birthday song. It doesn't last very long, right?
It gets straight to the point, and that's exactly what we want to do here in Congress.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate that, and for your service too. I guess there's a couple of things I want to go to. Budget reconciliation. Kind of front and center. Go ahead and launch into what's going on right now in Washington.
I absolutely. Well, thanks for the tee up. I mean, obviously that's a big part of what we're doing right now. We're trying to get through the House our one big beautiful bill by Memorial Day. And, my committee of jurisdiction, my A committee, Financial Services, we just went through that process yesterday. And just to give some background for the listeners, the way this works is we had a budget resolution that came through the House that was prescribed a floor of $1.5 trillion in savings over the next 10 years. So that was the instruction. And the way that works is each committee of jurisdiction is given a piece of that. So like $880 billion goes to ENC. Financial Services only got a $1 billion instruction, but, we don't have the big, expensive programs that some of the other committees do. But so that's the start of it. And now the committees have been having their meetings to find these savings and these floors. And just to kind of put things in perspective, our $1 billion instruction, we came out of a 10.5-hour committee hearing, which I'll tell you the story on that, which is, absurd.
Yeah.
But we came out of a 10.5-hour committee hearing, and we quintupled our instruction. So we actually found more than $5 billion in savings under Financial Services. And that's one committee of several. And if everybody continues to find these savings, I think that we can blow that $1.5 trillion out of the water and actually do some meaningful savings that, start to, right this ship and this, long-time problem with this country of, a complete abandonment of any kind of fiscal responsibility. So I'm really excited about that. Some of the machinations that people may not understand is I think we could have gotten through that 10.5-hour committee hearing in less than an hour, if not for the opposition party. Mm. And they kept they brought 36 amendments. And very few of those were germane to spending. It was all political messaging. And, people ask, how do you deal with that?
Right.
Oh, you sit there in that committee hearing and you hear all the, hyperbolic rhetoric that they're spewing out there that's all political, has nothing to do with policy. And I'm going to tell you one thing I'm really proud about with the members of that committee in my conference is we were very disciplined. We had an instruction on coming back with a reconciliation bill with our committee of jurisdiction that hit a floor of $1 billion in savings. We stuck to those principles, and it's important because reconciliation has to be strictly about spending. And at the end of the day, even though it was longer than any of us wanted to be there, you know, we prevailed. And I think we came out with some really good policy that doesn't harm anybody. It just makes things more efficient. And I'm really excited about that process. So to a little bit more. So now we've got, I think we've had about three or four of the committees have gotten through their reconciliation process. And we expect the rest of them to get through next week. And once we get all that done, then that goes into our final reconciliation bill that we're hoping to get out of the House by Memorial Day. And then we'll have the Senate's reconciliation bill and get that all coordinated and negotiated and reconciled and get that onto the president's desk. And the president has been very, very adamant that he wants this one, you know, big, beautiful bill that reins in out-of-control spending, that deals with, fraud, waste, and abuse, and actually gets us back on track so that we're not living beyond our means and we can actually claw back everything that we need to maintain the promise of America, of that American dream.
Troy Downing with us again, Montana's congressman for the Eastern District. Boy, I appreciate that information and the political messaging in those 36 amendments. And that's plain talk. I appreciate that, too, because that's where our politics has gone in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I think social media has something to do with that. Let's go back into those savings. Where did you find them? I mean, and DOGE is doing the same thing. They're finding it all over the place and they're reporting it and it's fraudulent. And so, you know, when you get that opposition party to push back on trying to uncover the fraud, I mean, that should say something in and of itself.
Well, here's part of it. A lot of it has gone into just the weaponization of organizations with heavy-handed overregulation.
Yeah.
And what makes me excited about this, and this might be a little, you know, esoteric for some if you're not, you know, up to your eyeballs in this, but there's like the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You know, that's a Dodd-Frank artifact that makes it hard for small lenders, medium lenders, regional banks to lend money. It makes it so that they have to jump through all these hoops to underwrite business loans, personal loans, mortgages, all of the stuff that they do that has nothing to do with the quality of the borrower or the type of business that they're funding. And so I'm just going to pull back for a second. What drives the American dream, what drives the economy, what drives small business, what drives job creation is access to capital. And so the CFPB has been, you know, weaponized to create this, you know, this hurdle or this throttle, making it harder to lend money in communities where these bankers want to lend money and know their borrowers. And so a big part of that was taking finding savings in that and really right-sizing it. At the end of the day, we need to make sure we've got reasonable sideboards for consumer protection, but this is an agency that just went wild. I mean, even, you know, there's one rule in there, Rule 1071, which requires every small bank to collect 81 data points, and, you know, 82 of those have nothing to do with the quality of the borrower. You know, well, I exaggerated that, of course, but but the problem is you've got a small bank that may have a small compliance department, and all of a sudden they're up to their eyeballs in paperwork, and that's not helping anybody. So we're finding savings in these regulatory agencies that have just grown too big and been weaponized, making it difficult and really stifling job creation, business growth, and the American dream.
Do you have now a plan that addresses that issue, these agencies? And I know we talk about the deep state, and it's kind of hard to define that, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I have a prime example, and this is just how big. I mean, government is good at one thing. It's good at growing and getting more expensive, and that's what we've seen. And so here's a prime example. You know, as you know, I was the insurance commissioner for the state of Montana. And the McCarran-Ferguson Act made it clear that insurance is regulated by the states. So it's a states' rights issue. There's no reason for the federal government to be involved in that at all. But under Dodd-Frank, you know, here's the second time I've mentioned it here. Under Dodd-Frank, they created the Federal Insurance Office. So the question begs itself, why do you have a federal insurance office when you have state-based regulation? I see that as a usurpation of states' rights. And so this is basically an agency that's created underneath the Treasury that it's not appropriated. It basically has a, you know, has an allowance that we're not exactly sure what it is from the Treasury. And what really was the thorn in my side is it kept trying to justify its existence. And so when I was the insurance commissioner, FIO started expanding to the point where they were doing data calls on climate resiliency. So again, pushing the Biden administration's Green New Deal aspirations into state insurance companies and basically usurping the authority of the state regulators. And so a couple of questions, you know, beg themselves. Why do we have a federal agency when we have state regulation? And why do we have an agency that can be easily weaponized by an administration to push a political agenda where they really don't have standing or a reason to be there? So the very first bill that I introduced was the Eliminate FIO Act to get rid of that. It's, it's not a huge agency everybody's talking about, but we need to start chipping away at this overreach of these agencies that really some of them don't have a reason to exist in the first place other than being weaponized and using political ends to start harming Americans. And so I think this is a huge opportunity to right that ship and to get rid of a federal agency that really has no reason to exist.
What's it take to get that across the finish line then?
Well, so right now I just had actually, I just came out of a meeting with the chair of the Housing and Insurance Subcommittee on Financial Services. So we're going to put together a roundtable with stakeholders and make sure that they're given a chance to opine. I've already introduced the bill. And once we do that, then we will very likely notice a hearing and bring FIO in there and allow the committee to, you know, question them on the stand. And then once that happens, I'm hoping that our bill actually gets into markup, which is the last thing that happens in the committee where amendments are suggested. And if it makes it through markup, then it goes to Speaker Johnson to schedule on the floor.
And other bills like this, I mean, are you going to be able to, you being yourself, but your members in the House, going to be able to pick off some of these agencies that are just doing nothing but wasting money and being advocates
well,
for
policy? You know, there's a couple of tools that we have. And, you know, one of those, like I mentioned, is the complete elimination of an agency. And that's what I'm trying to do with FIO.
Yeah.
And for all the reasons I already explained. But there's other ones that for, you know, various reasons, some of them parliamentary reasons, some of them, there's various reasons where it's just not feasible.
Yeah.
To get rid of the agency,
yeah.
But what we can do is we can change, especially the ones that have allowances and not appropriations, is we can change their funding source to be an appropriation. And once we do that, then the appropriation can be reduced to the point where they can do their core business without expanding and not building slush funds to be, again, weaponized against promotion of a political agenda. And so that's a huge tool right there. And that's going to be a big part of this reconciliation bill is right sizing the budgets of a lot of these. So, one of the things that I have right now is the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they're building a slush fund. So they've been given a cap on the amount of money that they can spend. But they've also got this slush fund that has been growing by about 12% a year, and this number is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So they can actually do a lot more than intended if somebody starts pushing them that way. So I have a bill right now to address that slush fund and make sure that they can't continue having this money just build up. So we're going to have that go straight back to the Treasury, pay down our debt, give us another tool for tax relief. And I think that's good policy, and that's something that we can do. Everybody's, I think most Americans agree that we've got a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse, and that we're spending our children's future away. And so everything that we can do to start chipping away at this, I think, is incredibly valuable and useful. And even though the public doesn't see the daily work that we're doing on this, trust me, there's a lot of work happening every day as we start pushing towards this goal of not just, identifying these savings, not just reducing spending, but another big thing on our agenda is making sure that we're taking these executive orders that are coming out of the White House and codifying them into law. So it's an exciting time in D.C.
Yeah.
right now.
He was an educator. A lot of people might not remember that. Spent time at New York University's Courant Institute of Mathematical Sciences. Also, U.S. Air Force and Air National Guard member, too, and served 8 years as the Combat Search and Rescue Squadron with a squadron there. So thank you for your service, military service, and your current service in Congress. It's Montana's Troy Downing with us here today. Brandon Lear, Speaker of the House, will join us in just a little bit. And Congressman, again, I appreciate your time, appreciate your service here. It's just fascinating when you talk about the process of Congress getting back to looking into the budget, getting back to right-sizing the budget and getting this waste out, because I just feel like it's just gotten so heavy and so big. And I think that's been one of the things. Go ahead.
I mean, the three of the big things when we ran this cycle were cutting, you know, making sure that we renew the tax cuts and cutting spending, you know, security at the border and energy dominance. And actually, I've got a really fun story on that topic for you. I don't think we talked about this before, but I was at the Bull Mountain Mine. I was at Signal Peak maybe a month ago. And I don't know if you've never seen this, it's really incredible to see a longwall coal mine. So went down, got a tour of the longwall. So I'm 800 feet underground. I don't know, probably 10 miles down a tunnel. So I'm down there with some of my district staff, and it's really incredible to see. And when I'm down there, I grab a chunk of coal, probably about the size of a loaf of bread, and I ask, hey, can I keep this? And they said, well, we measure by the ton. Yeah, go ahead and take it. So I pulled that up, and we shellacked it so it wouldn't come apart, and stuck it in my suitcase and flew it back to D.C. and put it on my desk. And then fast forward about a week, I got an invitation from the White House to come and participate in the president signing an executive order on coal mining on federal land. And so really honored to do that. I grab my chunk of coal, I go to the White House, and the president is introducing folks in the audience. He says, here's Congressman Downing from Montana. And I pick up my coal, it's an old bag, and he says, what is that? Oh, actually, I've got to give you an exposition. So when he first started his talk, he said, never say coal without saying clean and beautiful before it. It's beautiful, clean coal. And so he said that. And when he introduced Congressman Downing, I stand up. He goes, is that coal? And I'm going, no, Mr. President, it's beautiful, clean coal. And so actually I picked a piece of coal out of the ground myself, flew it to D.C. and walked it into the White House to present it to the president. So I'm really excited about that. And obviously, you know, energy is important to Montana. It's important to the 2nd District. It's something that I've been really advocating strongly on. And it's not just, like if you're talking about Bull Mountain or Signal Peak, it's not just about the, you know, almost 300 jobs there. And those are high-paid jobs that, you know, that's money being spent in the communities in Muscle Shoal County and in Yellowstone County. Very meaningful. It's also meaningful to the state. But I was really happy to, there's two things that I did, is the Biden administration had reduced or eliminated a permit to mine some of the coal underneath these federal sections. So I've got a bill out there basically reinstating that, and that gives us a couple of years of runway. But the bigger long-term solution is I've got the Crow Revenue Act there. And what that does is it swaps out the federal land with private trust land so that a future administration can't do the same thing that the Biden administration did. So we can continue mining that beautiful, clean coal. And, you know, here's something that kind of is a good segue. You know, one of the committees that I sit on in financial services is the Digital Assets Committee, and we deal with, you know, cryptocurrencies and blockchain and artificial intelligence. And we need to make sure that we continue to be innovative in the United States of America, that people are doing this innovation here, because if not, our adversaries are going to, you know, leave us in the dust. And it's not just about having a good regulatory framework that, you know, puts reasonable sideboards but doesn't stifle innovation. But the other part, and here's where I think Montana can play a role, is we need to be able to power it. We don't have the energy to sustain the growth that we're going to need in that sector. And so, you know, one of the things that I really care about is reliable, affordable energy. There's nothing more that contributes to the American dream than being able to afford reliable energy.
Yes.
But then the next part is being able to power, you know, this brave new world, this artificial intelligence, you know, all this other stuff that's coming. Whether you like it or not, it's coming.
Yep.
And we have to continue to work on our generation. And obviously a big part of that is fossil fuels in Montana. But the other part is we need to invest in our transmission, making sure that we can transmit it. We have a grid to be able to do that, because not every data center can be right next to the source of generation. Really advocating for that. And so one other thing that all of your congressional delegation did is the EPA has been weaponized and trying to, the Biden administration specifically targeted Colstrip and trying to shut that down with this MATS rule. And so all four of us, me and Senators Daines and Sheehy and Congressman Zinke, we wrote a letter on relieving these MATS rules because they were just overreaching and made it, financially unfeasible for Colstrip to remain in operation for the power plant. And so that actually just got signed, I think, about a week or two ago. So giving them some runway and relief from this real overreaching EPA rule. So I was happy to be part of that as well. And, it's just been an exciting time for me in D.C. because there's so many big issues that are incredibly meaningful to Montana, incredibly meaningful to the Second District, but also have, national implications, have national security implications. And I'm really excited to be on the front lines of being able to have a voice in that and represent, the folks in Montana's Second District and make sure that they have a voice in, clawing back those opportunities that made America great, making sure we're clawing back that ability to build that American dream, that ability for a young family to buy their first home, to, find a good job, to build a business. And it's an exciting time to be here.
Yeah. And like, you're right. It's so critical. And a lot of things on our plates here in Montana are across your plates there in Washington. One thing about energy, and I got like about a minute and a half here or whatever, is that I was thinking about this, Troy, and just your thoughts on it. We've got tariffs, they're coming, they're going. We may have policy that affects our economy. We there may be circumstances that affect our economy as well that hurt it. But affordable energy can cover a lot of those mistakes. If we can keep our energy cheap and affordable, those mistakes that may be made from a policy standpoint, we can recover from those a lot faster, in my mind, with affordable energy.
Well, I mean, it's an absolute requirement. I mean, it's not just traditional, turning the lights on and heating your home. It's not just about putting gas in your car or your truck and being able to get to work. But if we start doing some of this overreach that we're seeing from the EPA, and actually we did two CRAs I voted on today on pulling back some of that in the automotive industry.
Yeah.
To make sure that we pull some of that back. But if you look around your office right now, everything, your desk, your pencil, everything in that office all got there with diesel somehow. It came on a truck, it came on a plane, it came on a boat. It somehow came there with diesel. And if we continue to make that energy more expensive, everything in your life gets more expensive. And that's something we need to be very cognizant about, is balancing, this overreaching use of these agencies to make life more expensive for Americans. And there's nothing that can be more impactful than making sure that we have access to reliable, cheap energy.
Boy, right. Thank you so much for that. Cherry blossom time there in Washington, right?
That was a couple of weeks ago, and it was beautiful. Yeah. But now everything's like green, and it's starting to feel swampy. So I'm really happy. I'll be back in Montana tonight.
Look forward to that, Troy. Thank you so much, sir, for your
awesome
service. Yeah, good catching
right,
up
thank
with you.
Thank you.
Montana's Troy Downing, and Montanan, the Montana Speaker of the House, as a matter of fact. It's Brandon Lear joining us now here on Voices as the legislature wrapped up their business yesterday, and then we'll get a quick check-in before. Brandon, you probably got to get back and get some fence building going, eh?
Yeah, I'll be up here for a few more days, but we'll get back into the throes of real life here.
I heard people talk about after the legislative session, legislators, members there, and there's a lot of work, and you guys bond an awful lot, a lot of different ways, but there's a little bit of carryover, a little bit. It takes you maybe a couple of 3 weeks to get back into the swing of things. Is that true?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, I think all of us, up here kind of go about it in different ways. And, it's nice to, it's like you said, you kind of create a bond with people up here. You kind of get used to this environment. And then, we're all citizen legislators, so we all have to go back to every corner of Montana and continue on with normal life. And sometimes it, you know, sometimes you assimilate back real quick, and sometimes it can take you a few weeks. So, yeah.
I like how you put that. We're all, you know, unique in our own sort of ways. And I think as I'm watching the House of Representatives, and good job this year on the House, you got a lot of accolades for that from the members, and it was genuine. And that probably, you know, was very refreshing and important to you. But you recognize how everybody is different. And when you're working with 100 of them and they can all pick up a mic and tell you what's on their mind, that was an interesting perspective for me, is that in politics, that is something that you really have to be able to accept and in fact embrace and enjoy in my mind. What do you think?
Yeah. And, just to kind of add a little bit onto that too, you know, there's quite a few different leadership positions we have, and, you know, Representative Fitzpatrick, or Majority Leader Fitzpatrick, he's the majority leader of the Republican Party. And so, you know, he's really out there, you know, touting, you know, our caucus's views. And I do that too. But as the Speaker of the House, you're not just the Speaker of the Republican Party, you're the Speaker of the, you know, the whole House. And so you're, you know, in my opinion, the job there is to make sure that the place runs smoothly, that we're doing our work efficiently, and that every bill gets a fair shot. And that you know, everybody has their voice heard, and their opinion heard. And I guess on that, you know, every one of them has roughly 11,500 constituents, and their constituents' voice is through them. So you want to make sure that they're heard. And, you know, I have my views. And like I said yesterday in my closing speech there, you know, I can respect the minority leader, and we, you know, have a difference of opinion on many different issues. But I mean, that's just the way that this House works and that politics works, is that it's an eclectic group of people that you put together, and everybody has their own opinions, and you just got to try to manage them and make sure that there isn't any blowups. And I guess I'm pretty happy that we didn't have any of them.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you learn most? I mean, when you look back going into the position, you had some ideas, you get into it. Now it's been almost 90 days plus. What was one thing that you would take away that you didn't know going in that you know now?
That's kind of a tough one.
Something to think about.
One of the biggest things I've learned is that plan A hardly ever works. You got to have a plan A, B, C, D. I mean, you need to have about 6 different contingency plans on different things, because plan A hardly ever works. Sometimes plan A might work in the end, but you might have to run through 4 or 5 different plans before you get back to plan A. And so it's always, you know, making sure that you, whether it's with property taxes, whether it's with, you know, anything else under the sun, sometimes, you know, that first crack at it doesn't work. So you have to have another plan. And, you know, just, I guess I, coming into this, I knew I needed to, you know, make sure everybody was heard. But I mean, sitting people down earlier, getting groups of people, opinion, not just necessarily that person. I think I talked to just about everybody, if not everybody, well before the session started. But when things get going, making sure that this, you know, these 20 people that kind of form a relationship or a caucus on their own, that they're at the table and that their concerns are heard first, too. So I would say, getting everybody together early and having multiple different plans are the two things that I would say that I've learned that need to be done up front.
A couple of great observations there. Let's go to a caller, Skip in Hamilton. You're on the air listening KLYQ. That's 1290 AM. You've got Speaker Brandon Lear here on Voices. And good morning, Skip.
Thank you, Tom. And Brandon, I've watched carefully the whole session on and all kinds of different news feeds to see what their slanted or not opinions are. I watched you from the beginning. I live over in David Colonel David Beatty. He's our representative. I live in his territory. I've always considered him a really consummate legislator, and he I guess he's termed out of being a representative now, would be fine with me if he runs for another position. And so I wanted to tell you that from the, at the very beginning, I was like, I don't know, is this, who's this, this Brandon Lear? I saw him when he was a first term, legislator and he's from that metropolis of Savage over there in eastern Montana. And so I ought to tell you that I was so impressed with the way you handled your whole body of people, and you're so level headed and just fair, and you kept everything together. I would suggest way better than the president of the Senate did. And I just wanted you to know that. But I wanted to ask you one thing. As you look back, like today, all of a sudden, you're basically going home for the first time in a while to get down to business there. What is, if there's one thing that sticks out in your mind that is, I'll say, a disappointment that in what happened? Do you think there's one thing that we know we can use to learn how to do it better the next time? And thank you for your service to our state, and I was really appreciated the way that you handled your body. And I'll just leave it there. And thank you, Tom, as always.
Yeah, thank you, Skip. Appreciate that. Don't let the big red beard fool you. You're a Brandon is a policy wonk, that's for sure.
So a couple different things there. I would say that kind of the question you asked me before, I would say doing things different, getting groups of people together early so that way maybe we can, buy a little bit farther right than left, would be one of the things I think that I would do differently. Something that we left on the table, I would say, Representative Beattie and I, I respect him. We disagree on quite a few issues, but I still respect Representative Beattie. And one thing that we differed on that I think we left on the table was partisan judges. Doing it differently, I think that, we had three or four bills that were on that issue. And I think that I think we had the juice to pass one. We ran out of time. And that's something I think coming into next session that I think is still going to be one of the foremost issues that we're going to want to work on. In that regard too, I think property tax is always going to be evolving too. Do I think what we passed here this session is perfect? No, but I think it's the right bill for the time we have, and we'll be back in 18 months and see if we can't keep that ball rolling on the property tax issue too.
Yeah, and those are some good observations too on that in terms of judicial reform. There was some really good debate on those bills in the House, and real good civil debate in my mind too. And I've always encouraged people to go if you want to learn about these issues. Go to the House floor session. Committee meetings are another place, but really the House floor session is where it all comes out. Real close on a couple of them. So maybe it's just coalition building, you think? And there was a couple that got by. Got across, I think, McGillivray's bill in the Senate about creating an evaluation committee. I think that one is through, at least through the Congress. A key thing. But what's going to happen as we look at this property tax bill out there? We got 2 years to kind of see what's going to happen with it. What do you anticipate in that?
I think it's definitely going to help out your primary residents of Montana on their property taxes. There is going to be a shift to be a shift to homes out of staters, and on your utilities on a few different classes, and I think that coming back into next session, I think there's going to be some real hard talks about how do we, for one, we need to, maybe control local spending. And I know there's quite a few, cities and counties out there that do a great job of controlling their local spending. And then on the flip side of that, I think there's some that, are not doing such a great job. And so I think it's trying to strike that balance of not hindering the counties that are doing good and trying to, figure out how we can control their spending or how we can, I guess, push them to curtail their spending. And I don't know how we do that at the state level, but I think that's one of the big issues we have. And then on top of that, too, I mean, Representative Schillinger said it, and I've wrote many articles and paper about it, too, is that, 30, 40, 50 years ago, most of our property taxes was paid by, natural resource development, whether that was oil, coal, natural gas, timber, and we see all that going away. So unless we find a new source of revenue, property taxes is going to fall squarely on, residential, ag, and commercial. And so I don't know what that new source of revenue will be. I'm not necessarily supportive of a sales tax unless we get rid of an income tax or a property tax. And even at that, I would want it, constitutionally saying that Montana can only have two forms of taxes at once before we do that. So It's, there's a lot of talk. And as we say, your kind of property taxes is a box that has to be full all the time. And so it's just trying to figure out maybe a new source or trying to figure out how we can cut spending at the local level and even in education, make everything a little bit more efficient to where we can, start curtailing the spending.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I got 2 minutes, then I'll let you. I'll take my final break and then come back and wrap it up myself. So, because I know you're very busy and I'm anxious for you to get home too. So, in like the next minute and a half or so, give me a lighter moment, Brandon, Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear. Give me a lighter moment that kind of stays with you through this last session.
There was a moment there. The majority leader, he kind of wears the same color pants every day and same color jacket every day. And I suppose here was probably pushing a month ago. There's a bunch of folks that wore khaki pants and a blue suit coat. And when I called on the majority leader to close out a session, about 40 people stood up in the body because they were all kind of dressed like him. I had no idea. I wasn't paying attention to that. And all of a sudden, everybody stands up. And usually when somebody does that, you did something wrong. So I was kind of reeling there for a second up in the rostrum wondering, whoa, what did I do? Where are we going now? And anyway, it was a pretty funny moment.
I remember that too. Yeah. And Steve's a good guy for that. And having him as an experienced majority leader, and then even Katie Sullivan, as a minority leader, I think those two leaders probably, they had a good impact on the body, didn't they?
Oh no, for sure. I respect Representative Fitzpatrick. He knows the process, he knows the rules, he knows how to move things, and it was definitely I definitely leaned on him when I needed help, especially process wise, and we were able to put together some strategies to try to get our agenda through, and I really appreciate having him in the position he was in. So it worked out really well.
Montana Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear. Brandon, you get to go back to being just Mr. Lear and Brandon Lear here. But thank you. The work that you and the whole body put in, it's vital for us. And so I very much appreciate it, Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Looking forward to chatting with you down the road too, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.